Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profile. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, Profilers. Wait, we're going to start the show with three high fives in a row. One, two, three, and here's why, ladies and gentlemen. This is what Profiles is all about, talking about the greatest of the greats. Mm-hmm. Today's spotlight, today's profile is, without question, one of the all-time greatest filmmakers of all time.
Of all time.
That gets another high five because we are profiling Billy Wilder. What is it about his movies that makes Billy Wilder one of the top three greatest filmmakers of the 20th century?
I think because he's such a versatile director. You know, he doesn't just stick to one genre. He's done film noirs as well as screwball comedies and romantic comedies, and they all seem to have this thread of darkness underneath them.
Oh, yeah.
He's also written the most memorable dialogue, probably during that golden age of Hollywood, and some of the most iconic images, too. I mean, who could forget Marilyn Monroe with the white skirt and 7-Year Itch?
I'm repping Marilyn. You're repping Audrey Hepburn. We got The Girl and Sabrina repped here. And when you look at, like, Audrey Hepburn and Marilyn Monroe, and you're like, wow, Billy Wilder directed both of them? I mean, Marilyn Monroe twice.
And Jack Lemmon seven times?
Seven times. Now, there's a muse. Yeah. There's a great relationship. But yeah, the dialogue in these movies, going back, I have to say, rewatching the movies has always been like my favorite part of like researching, doing my homework for Profiles.
Yeah, me too.
But this was homework I would have actually paid to do.
Well, these are the movies I watch all the time anyway. Like whenever I'm feeling down, I'll watch something like The Apartment and it lifts me back up. And I also loved the way that our Fast Five this week is all black and white movies.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. Wow, that is totally your jam. Another high five. A lot of high fives today. Start your engines with the Profiles drinking game. But this is a director of more than 50 years, more than 60 films. Mm-hmm. And you're right. He covered so many different genres. His movies are sharp, witty, cynical. Like you said, they can get pretty dark, poignant, heavy. And it is, but no matter what, Billy Wilder, he did his work with such finesse.
He sure did.
I mean, and he also, it's hard to see this now, but when you go back and try and put yourself into perspective of the times, you realize just how much he pushed the boundaries of what was acceptable subject matter for a Hollywood film. I mean, look at 1945, The Lost Weekend. Mm-hmm. That is an unflinching, uncompromising look at alcohol addiction that even by today's standards is still really powerful.
I'm still amazed that something like Sunset Boulevard exists at 1950. Man. It's pretty dark.
It is dark and it is funny. And did I mention it was dark?
Very dark.
Very
but I love
dark.
It.
But the dialogue in that movie, we'll get to
all of that.
But this is also a director. He was the first filmmaker to win an Oscar for Best Picture, Best Director, and Screenplay on the same movie.
Only five people have accomplished that.
Only five people. I was going to say that, but you beat me to it. High five again, Miss Malone. Well, I know that Billy Wilder is your jam, and after working on Profiles, doing my research and my homework, I could honestly say that he is my jam, too.
Mission accomplished.
And I have to say that if it wasn't for you, I would not have learned to embrace Billy Wilder like I have.
That makes me feel happy.
So, way to go.
Hopefully some people out there will too.
And that is what Profiles is all about.
Oh, yeah.
So, wonderful movies, wonderful body of work.
Wonderful life.
What a great segue, Alicia Malone.
Let's have a look at Billy Wilder's wonderful life. Roll it.
Billy Wilder was born Samuel Wilder on June 22, 1906, in what was then known as Austria-Hungary. Though he originally planned to become a lawyer, he took up journalism and moved to Berlin to work for the city's largest tabloid. He toiled around as a screenwriter and wrote scripts for many German films, but fled to Paris after Hitler came into power in the early 1930s. He then moved to Hollywood and became a U.S. citizen in 1934. Wilder's breakthrough as a screenwriter came in 1939's Ninotchka, for which he earned his first Academy Award nomination. He made his feature directorial debut with 1942's The Major and the Minor. But it wasn't until his third film, 1944's Double Indemnity, that he scored his first major hit as a director. Billy Wilder is regarded as one of the most brilliant filmmakers of Hollywood's golden age. He won 6 competitive Academy Awards, 2 of them for Best Director for 1945's The Lost Weekend and 1960's The Apartment. Wilder passed away at the age of 95 on March 27, 2002, in Beverly Hills, California.
Well, 95.
That's good innings, as we say in Australia.
Good innings? Really? That's good what innings. You call a good long life,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, like cricket. Wow. Good innings.
Wow. But, you know, like, I really mean it, that one of the great joys of my life has been doing profiles.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've learned so much, and I've gone back to see movies I've seen a million times, like when we did Scorsese and Spielberg and Coppola and the likes.
Yeah.
Movies I'd seen a million times, I was getting new things out of rewatching those movies.
Yeah.
Because I was looking at them with a different eye while working on profiles.
Yeah, me too. It
so
teaches me a lot. I love it.
I know that some of these movies are among your favorites of all time.
Uh-huh.
I know that some of the movies we're going to talk about are films that you've seen millions of times.
Uh-huh.
So when we get to these movies in our Fast Five, I'm going to ask you, just so you can start thinking ahead,
okay.
I'm going to ask you what you saw differently in these movies while doing your research or profiles.
All right.
That's so start thinking.
I
but
will.
Before we get to our Fast Five,
yes.
What is your Billy Wilder first blood?
My first blood was actually Sabrina.
Okay.
I remember seeing it when I was quite young. Mm-hmm. And my sister Yvette, who listens to this podcast every week. Hi, Yvette. In Melbourne, Australia. I love watching movies with her because I think I've mentioned this before. She notices these little funny details and finds them hilarious. And then I find them funny because of that. So I remember when I was rewatching Sabrina, I remembered this one line, which I always used to laugh at because she used to laugh at when they go, Scrabble? I'm in no condition to play Scrabble when he's in the hammock with the butt cut out. Just little things like that, I would just laugh at so much. And I think I saw Sabrina and then I saw The Apartment and it took me a while to figure out, oh, Billy Wilder's the same director for all these different films that I loved because mm-hmm. I remember seeing Double Indemnity and Sunset Boulevard and it took me a while to put them all together. Some Like It Hot, used to watch that all the time too because I went through a huge Marilyn phase where I was just obsessed with her.
Well,
so
you
much.
Are the Australian Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, I will take that.
Yes,
sure.
You are absolutely the. Again, I was going to suggest because you know usually we like to wear the t-shirts of whoever we're profiling.
Yeah.
So today, you know, like I said, you're representing Audrey Hepburn. I got Marilyn Monroe. I was going to recommend, but I didn't want people to laugh too hard. I didn't want it to distract from people watching profiles.
Uh-huh.
I was going to suggest that you wear a blonde wig like Marilyn Monroe,
yeah.
And I would have dressed up like Jack Lemmon.
That's
from
cool.
Some Like It Hot.
So you would wear a blonde wig as well.
Well, I would wear the blonde wig as well. But like, but if people are watching and we're talking seriously about movies,
yeah.
They would have checked out.
That would be funny. I'd still like to see that at some point.
Well, you know, we still have our photo shoot planned for profiles one of these days.
What was your first blood?
My first blood was actually, you talk about the little things that you remember.
Yep.
The little thing I remember about The 7-Year Itch was a very, very, very big deal. Was this skirt being blown up.
Oh, yeah.
And that was what I remember. And I remember I was watching it with my dad. I mean, I was really young. It was definitely when I was in my single-digit years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was into sci-fi. I was already a big Star Trek fan, and Star Wars had already come out. So my head already exploded with all that stuff. But my dad, I'll never forget, it was in the late 70s, said, you really want to see a good movie? Feast your eyes on this. And it was on TV.
Yeah.
And it was a 7-Year Itch. And I mean, obviously, Marilyn Monroe just like knocked my socks off.
Wow.
But that scene, and then my dad told me about the story behind that scene,
mm-hmm.
Where Joe DiMaggio, who was married to Marilyn Monroe at the time, did not like the shooting of that scene. They actually had to go to a soundstage to finish it off.
Yeah.
But it is just one of the iconic moments of film history.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you go down Hollywood Boulevard, you see posters of Marilyn Monroe.
Everywhere.
What do you see her doing? You see her in the white skirt, you know, mm-hmm. trying to hold her dress down. But that is the movie that definitely made a big impression. Of course, it took me years later to realize and appreciate it as a Billy Wilder film.
Exactly. Well, let's get into our Fast Five. Number 5 is...
How do you say, My brother has a lovely girl.
Mon frère a une gentille petite amie.
And how do you say, I wish I were my brother?
Ah, Sabrina! The Vion Rose, released October 15th, 1954. Six Oscar nominations, including Best Screenplay, Best Director, and Best Actress for Audrey Hepburn. Mm-hmm. And it won one for Best Costume Design. And like a lot of films in our Fast Five, this one deals with a love triangle.
Yep.
And it deals with attempted suicide.
Yeah, pretty dark.
Pretty dark for a romantic movie.
For what is essentially a fairy tale, a Cinderella story. Mm-hmm. She is a tomboy and she goes off to Paris and she grows up to be a beautiful princess who attracts the prince of her dreams. And then there's a love triangle. But yeah, I like the fact that there's this darkness underneath it all. Audrey Hepburn is so beautiful in this.
So beautiful.
So elegant and gorgeous. Just that scene in the train station where she's waiting. She's come back from Paris. She has her dog and she just looks so glamorous and elegant. I remember watching it that when I was young and just going, oh my gosh, that is a woman. Like, that is just class personified.
She like Marilyn Monroe, Audrey Hepburn just has this look that just defies any kind of description of her beauty.
Mm-hmm.
She's that beautiful, but this is it's a romantic film. It's irresistible.
Yeah.
And it's just so charming and elegant, and she's so idealistic, and then she comes back a different person, like you said, Cinderella story. Mm-hmm. Based on the 1953 play Sabrina Fair by Samuel Taylor. And the New York Times in its review for Sabrina back in 1954 said, credit Billy Wilder for his unerring sense of form, his fluency with the picture, his feel for the realistic look, and his wonderfully hard-grained comic sense of style. Sabrina is a real and lasting joy, the best romance since, Alicia, one of your favorite movies of all time, It Happened One Night.
Oh, lovely.
Isn't
and
that great?
I mean, you can see the magic of this film when you watch the remake.
Oh, yeah.
From the 90s.
Please.
With Harrison Ford.
Not
it just doesn't live up to it. It doesn't have that same sparkle as this movie. And apparently Cary Grant was offered the role of Linus, which Humphrey Bogart ended up taking. And Humphrey Bogart apparently had a pretty terrible time on set. He was not happy with William Holden. He was not happy with Audrey Hepburn, who apparently took quite a few takes to get her lines perfect. And later on, he apologized to Billy Wilder, said that he was just going through some personal issues at the time.
Well, he had cancer.
Yeah, so
yeah.
That's understandable. And you asked me before what difference I see now.
Okay.
When I watch Sabrina.
Mm-hmm.
I am looking at it with a different eye because I know what Humphrey Bogart was going through during that time. But you can't tell at all. He's just so suave. And he's one of the reasons I love this movie, because you see Bogey in a completely different light.
Oh, yeah, that's
There's
absolutely
nothing
true.
You expect from him.
And even though a lot of people at the time sort of singled him out for being a little bit miscast,
I think that's why it works.
But I think that absolutely is why
Linus
it works.
Linus is a bit like, he's different from David. You
he's
know? He's not the playboy.
He's not the playboy like William Holden's David. And speaking of David, William Holden and Audrey Hepburn had a love affair while the making of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually broke it off when she realized that he wasn't able to have kids.
Yeah.
But in talking about Humphrey Bogart, you know, he was also a little bitter with Wilder because he was not his first choice to play Linus.
Apparently Cary Grant turned down the role several times before
Went
to Bogey.
Well, in his book Conversations with Wilder that Cameron Crowe wrote back in 1999, this is what Billy Wilder said about Humphrey Bogart. He said, my last memory is that he was a really terrific guy. He was very good, better than he thought he was. He liked to play the hero, and in the end, he was.
Aww, he's so suave,
he's
Humphrey
so
Bogart.
Suave.
And this was also the first time that Audrey Hepburn was wearing Givenchy dresses. So Givenchy, you know, clothed her along with Edith Head, who won the Oscar for Best Costumes. And then this started the lifelong association between Audrey and Givenchy. Then from then on, she was always in those beautiful, elegant dresses. I want to wear yards of silk and way off the shoulder.
I love that line. Excuse me, gentlemen, I have a previous engagement.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. And he just like walks out, gets in the tugboat. So great. Well, unfortunately, we didn't get any like real love for Sabrina specifically from Profilers, but we did get just as a general sense from for Billy Wilder. Ewan Daly said, all the films you mention are brilliant and so different, from great love stories like Some Like It Hot to brilliant noir classics like Double Indemnity and The Lost Weekend. Billy Wilder is just so brilliant and really has created some of the best classics from the 1940s to the 70s. Also, Wilder got the best from Marilyn Monroe as an actress. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. Who was one of the best of her generation. I can't wait for your podcast because you almost need a top 10 that the Ten Commandments would be an appropriate name for. That would have been good.
We could have almost done that. Well, there's lots of great scenes when it comes to Billy Wilder films. What was your right stuff?
Well, I know this might be obvious, but it's just so haunting, the end of Sunset Boulevard, mm-hmm. when Nora Desmond, after she's already killed William Holden, and then Max is like shooting her final scene, and she's walking down the stairs, and she's completely demented, and she goes, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up, and she walks towards the camera, and as she's walking towards the camera, she goes out of focus, and it fades to black, and it's just so haunting and unforgettable, so iconic, so quoted, that it just, when I was rewatching it, I'm like, you know, trying to find like, well, should I pick another scene? I'm like, nope, that's the one.
No, that's a great scene. And
what's
I think
yours?
Billy Wilder has some of the great endings of all time.
Oh.
I chose another ending. It was from The Apartment. Mm-hmm. I love that the ending of the Apartment, when Fran comes over to Mr. Baxter and he says, I love you. And she just keeps shuffling the cards. And he's like, did you hear what I said? And she says, shut up and deal.
Shut up and deal.
I love that line.
He goes, I adore you.
Yeah.
And she goes, shut up and deal. It's so great.
Such a great ending. And we'll be talking about some other great endings as we go along. A lot of great trivia as well with Billy Wilder films. A
lot of great trivia. Hit
me up. I discovered that I didn't know before. Well, one that has been reported was Billy Wilder had a pretty tumultuous relationship with Marilyn Monroe because she would show up late and she'd take a lot of takes, and he liked everything to be on time. But he got his revenge in The Apartment with the drunk secretary who was the Marilyn Monroe lookalike.
Oh, yeah.
So that was kind of a little ha-ha at Marilyn. But he said later on that even though she did show up late and she made things quite difficult, people paid to see Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah,
and when
she
switched it on, she was perfect.
I was actually going to save this quote from when we talked about this movie. I don't know what movie I could be talking about here. But the quote that I want to read now, just because you're on topic, mm-hmm. This is what Billy Wilder had to say about Marilyn Monroe. This is also from Conversations with Wilder, Cameron Crowe's book. He said, she had a kind of elegant vulgarity about her, and she automatically knew where the joke was. Mm. I was upset that she wasn't showing up on time, but when she did show up, she delivered. And if it took 80 takes, I lived with 80 takes because the 81st was very good.
That's right. She had something special about her.
That is why we are still talking about Billy Wilder and Marilyn Monroe. Well, speaking of Cameron Crowe, that Cameron Crowe and Tom Cruise went to Billy Wilder face to face and asked him to be in Jerry Maguire.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, nope.
Really?
He said, nope.
He was going to be just a cameo?
No, he was going to be that guy, the guy who's like, that keeps showing up with all this like positive energy.
Yeah.
That was going to be Billy Wilder's character.
Oh,
and he just said no.
Well, it's pretty amazing that Billy Wilder has been thanked several times in speeches. One, of course, was by the director of The Artist, who said he had three people to thank: Billy Wilder, Billy Wilder, and Billy Wilder, because he said he borrowed heavily from Billy Wilder's films to make The Artist.
Oh, yeah.
And then also in when Kevin Spacey won the award for American Beauty, he thanked Jack Lemmon because he'd been watching The Apartment several times. You had that written down,
yeah,
too. He'd be watching The Apartment several times to get into the mood for his role. So
give it a
that.
High five.
I
give it a that. High five. I love that we're on the same page here. Wilder's last movie was almost a film that was directed by another director, Schindler's List.
Yes, I
Wilder.
Heard that.
Wilder worked on the screenplay with Steven Spielberg, and he wanted to direct it, but ultimately he felt like he was too old. He had already retired, and he was the one who said, "Steven Spielberg, you should direct this movie," and that is what happened.
And then there's history after that.
Yes, exactly.
Movie history was born.
What else you got?
That's it.
Wait, I got a couple more. I got a couple more. Nora Desmond's house on Sunset Boulevard.
Yes.
The real house that they used for that movie was actually on Wilshire Boulevard.
Oh, wow. There you go.
It was on Wilshire Boulevard, and it was demolished in 1957 for an office building.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Well, there's definitely a lot of great trivia. But before we move on with our show, time to take care of some business. For our profilers. Listen. We know you love profiles. We love profiles, too. We want to keep this going forever and ever and ever, just like in The Shining, forever and ever, ever. So that is why we need you to go to iTunes, to subscribe to Profiles, to rate and review. This is really important. Rate and review us. Rate and review Profiles. We need these ratings and reviews to survive so we can keep coming back. Every 2 weeks, maybe every week, maybe we'll kick it up a notch now that we're getting some love from profilers.
Make sure
you go to YouTube, .com/Popcorn Talk Network.
Correct.
And subscribe to that and make sure you share Profiles with everyone. Share it with everyone. Let's make Profiles go viral. Doesn't the show deserve to be seen and heard by more people?
Yeah.
It does. Make it go viral. Take a stand and spread the love of Profiles throughout the world. And make sure you go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Vance. As you can see, our Facebook page is very, very busy because not only do we solicit comments and read comments from profilers like yourself, but we always make the announcement of who our next profile is going to be. Mm-hmm. We do these brackets that everybody chimes in on. It is a real community feeling, and you will make friends with other profilers, other hashtag film geeks just like yourself. And last but not least, make sure you follow us on Twitter at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance. And please, again, follow us, go to our Facebook page, and subscribe to iTunes and YouTube. Share Profiles with everyone.
Good work.
Back to the show, Miss Malone.
Back to the show. Fast Five number 4 is...
I killed him for money. And for a woman. And I didn't get the money, and I didn't get the woman.
Double Indemnity.
Double Indemnity, released September 6, 1944. 7 Oscar nominations, including screenplay, director, best picture. Billy Wilder's third U.S. feature, a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it one of the greatest film noirs of all time, it is a movie that raised the bar and set the standard for every other film noir to follow.
And you know what I realized while watching this one again?
Tell me.
It almost feels like a parody. Like if you didn't know much about the film noir genre and you watched it now, it almost feels like an SNL skit because it has all the elements
all
that a film noir
element.
Has.
You're right, it does.
It's got the narration, it's got the Venetian blind lighting, the femme fatale, and the complex plot, and the darkness, the rain, and I just love it. The fast dialogue.
The fast dialogue. And he keeps saying baby. He keeps calling her baby.
Baby.
Right, hey baby, you know,
and
hey baby.
Keys.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, every single element that has ever been parodied or lampooned in film noir.
Like you can imagine like Kristen Wiig doing like
totally
this kind of thing.
Oh my gosh, you're totally right.
But I love Barbara Stanwyck. She is just so cool.
The ultimate femme fatale.
Scenes of her with the sunglasses. I want to do that hair. I mean, she is so great.
Deliberately bad wig, so to make her look like a sleazy, phony person.
Yeah,
this is a masterpiece. It's gripping, riveting, intense. And I noticed, rewatching it so close to another film that I rewatched, that it has a similar structure.
Begins at the end,
and it's
works backwards.
Narrated.
Yes.
And instead of the person being dead, the person is almost dead.
Yeah.
And Double Indemnity made such an impact in 1944 that this particular filmmaker had this to say. He said, since Double Indemnity, the two most important words in motion picture are Billy and Wilder. Do you know who said that?
No.
Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, wow.
Whoa!
That's great.
How Alfred Hitchcock. I'll take
this
that.
This was a hugely, hugely influential film, particularly on the film noir genre. And it's got a pretty simple story, but it's just, it makes an impact completely. Co-written by Billy Wilder and Raymond Chandler, who's known for a lot of the film noir crime, hard-boiled crime kind of stories.
They did not get along.
Yeah,
they did
that.
Not get along, and because Raymond Chandler has a lot, he drinks a lot.
Yeah.
And in fact, the following year, when Billy Wilder directed The Lost Weekend, he did that movie in a response to working with Raymond Chandler on Double Indemnity.
Too much drinking.
But how much do you love Barbara Stanwyck in this movie?
Love her so much.
She's awesome, right?
Yes.
Well, this is what Billy Wilder had to say about Barbara Stanwyck in Cameron Crowe's book, Conversations with Wilder. I read a lot last week. I had the week off, so I read
That's
a lot.
Great.
I had no difficulties with her at all. She knew the script. She knew everybody's lines. You could wake her up in the middle of the night, and she would just know her scene. Never a fault, never a mistake, just a wonderful brain she had. Mm. And, one of my favorite scenes in the movie, I mean, there's just so many great scenes because it is just – every shot is a classic image.
Mm-hmm.
But when, and this is, I mean, I'm not spoiling anything here. The movie came out in 1944. But when Fred McMurray kills the husband, you don't see the strangulation happen.
Mm-mm.
You look, you only see her. She's driving because it happens in a car. The camera stays on her. And while the killing is happening, you just sort of see her subtly get off on it.
Yeah.
Like just like the slow smile comes across her face. Like she's like, she's the one holding the cards.
I know. She's evil.
She's got
so much power.
He got played.
And when he realizes that, he's like, oh my gosh, she totally played everyone and you got exactly what you wanted.
So, so great.
Well, Rachel Cushing loves Double Indemnity.
Hi, Rachel.
She says, when I first saw Double Indemnity, I was entirely blown away by the moody acting, gritty storytelling, and absolutely stunning cinematography. I now understand that what I was reacting to, it's the literal and metaphorical darkness, cynicism, and sexual innuendo. It's the meat and potatoes of the genre known as film noir. Wilder, with the help of the great crime novelist Raymond Chandler, created this genre, which has become known for its shadows like the opening silhouette, charged dialogue, cigarettes, trench coats, affairs, and murder. I absolutely love McMurray's weary narration, Stanwyck's striking and original femme fatale, and the way the story spirals out of control for the doomed lovers. This is daring, suspenseful, and stylized filmmaking at its very best.
And that is one hell of a review. That's Rachel Cushing.
Fantastic.
Well written as always.
Yeah.
Mark Tordai says this about Double Indemnity. Thrillers are my second favorite genre of all time after science fiction, as Double Indemnity is the grandfather of all modern thrillers. Innovating elements such as the suspense, the ticking clock, and the plan gone wrong. Without this masterpiece, one of the greatest directors to ever live, we'd have no The Conversation, no JFK, no Taken, and the list goes on.
True.
Double Indemnity is simply one of the best films ever made.
Woo! Now it's time for our quiz show.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to get this one. You probably will because you're great at this. Okay, here we go. Are you ready?
Yes.
In Sabrina, Humphrey Bogart wants tickets to see what play? Is it 1, Oklahoma? 2, The 7-Year Itch? 3, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof? Or 4, Long Day's Journey into Night?
That one. No. Nope.
I'm going to say it again.
No.
Humphrey Bogart wants tickets to see what play? Oklahoma, The 7-Year Itch, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof,
Oklahoma.
Long Day's Journey into Night.
Oklahoma.
7-Year Itch.
Oh.
Okay.
Totally missed that one. Okay, well, mine's pretty easy. Okay, actors who auditioned for Jack Lemmon's role in Some Like It Hot include A, Bob Hope, B, Frank Sinatra, C, Anthony Perkins, or D, all of the above?
I'm going to say all of the above.
Yay!
Yay!
I thought that was an interesting fact.
That is a good fact!
Can you imagine Anthony Perkins?
Anthony Perkins, so this would have been right before Psycho.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Very different role.
Can you imagine? Doing Some Like It Hot and then Psycho.
Yeah, well, both require wigs.
Yes.
And dresses.
Yes, they do, don't they? He probably went like, oh, come on. Well, we haven't done this segment in quite a while.
Yes.
But because when we talk about modern movies, most of the modern movie posters, it's just the person's face. I mean, very rarely do you have a modern filmmaker whose movie posters and one sheets reflect the feel and style of their film, like Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great example of someone who did. But, I mean, we're going back to the classics, and those are the movie posters. Those are the one sheets. Mm-hmm. That's why we have the return of
The Big Picture.
So let's take a look at Billy Wilder's best movie posters.
Gloria Swanson is a force to be reckoned with as the ultimate femme fatale in the iconic one-sheet for 1950s Sunset Boulevard. The red background indicates danger, while the knotted film strip suggests a big twist in the story. Ray Milland looks desperate on the one-sheet for The Lost Weekend, a harrowing look at alcohol addiction that's just as engrossing and relevant now as it was back in 1945. And our favorite Billy Wilder movie poster features one of the most famous images in motion picture history. Marilyn Monroe. That white dress. The 7-year itch. Nuff said.
Like I said.
Iconic image.
I saw that one sheet. I'm like, that's got to be the number one movie. It's one of the most iconic scenes.
For sure.
But moving back to our Fast Five.
Number three is...
I'm a man. Well... Nobody's perfect.
Released March 29th, 1959. Nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Actor for Jack Lemmon, Best Director for Billy Wilder. It won for costume design, as it should.
Yeah.
This is one of the best comedies of all time. It topped the AFI list of best comedies. It is a classic screwball comedy. Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis, they are so great together.
They are.
Who was better looking? Josephine or Daphne?
I'm partial to Jack Lemmon, so I like him. I'll go with him.
I actually kind of had a crush on Josephine in this movie, Tony Curtis.
There you go, one each.
We're not going to fight over the same person in this
one. Well, set in 1929.
My First Blood! Alexis! All right, way to go, so I'm looking hot.
Set in 1921, filmed in black and white, even though at the time that it was released, 1959, color films were becoming more and more popular. And it's based on a French film called Fanfares of Love. It's probably Billy Wilder's most high concept film. It's a crazy story. There's so much to work in, so much to play with, and quite socially ahead of its time. When you look at it, it shows attraction in all its various forms.
Right, yeah, it's true.
And I love that Marilyn is just out for, she just wants to be a trophy wife, but she's probably the, I think this would be my favorite role of hers because she's used so perfectly. And she has such great lines, like the fuzzy end of the lollipop. Oh, I love that. And like a tube of toothpaste all squeezed out.
And she gets to sing, I want to be loved by you, by you.
So good.
Nobody else but you.
And then
you.
To teach Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon, the studio hired Barbette, who was a famous female impersonator at the time. And she taught them tricks, and then the two went in costume and they walked around Goldwyn Studios to see if anyone would notice, and no one batted an eyelid, so they knew they'd got it right.
It is such so great that even by today's standards, you literally can say they don't make movies like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, you could watch a movie, a comedy like this, and you go, so that's how it's done. I mean, it's just so perfect in every way, shape, or form. And listen, for this to be number three in our Fast Five just shows you how great Billy Wilder's movies are, because this could easily have been number one.
Definitely.
And Tony Curtis deliberately imitated Cary Grant while playing Junior.
Which I think could have been a little bit of a... there's a few digs at Cary Grant throughout Billy Wilder's films.
But when Cary Grant finally went back and saw Some Like It Hot, he goes, I don't sound like that.
Tony Curtis does a perfect impression of him.
Well, this movie was shot on location at the Hotel Del Coronado in San Diego, even though it took place in Florida. The working title for this movie... Not tonight, Josephine.
Yeah, I like that.
But I like Some Like It Hot. What's the line that the Junior says? He goes, Some Like It Hot, but I prefer classical music.
And the end line that we paid before, like, that's one of the best endings to a comedy ever.
Ever. Nobody's perfect.
You don't see that coming.
You don't. And it's just the perfect, like, you know,
perfect.
Wrap up this movie. Roger Ebert called Some Like It Hot one of the enduring treasures of the movies, and you just can't. You can't argue with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about how Billy Wilder shot all his, he loved black and white. Mm-hmm. And there was a sort of an urban legend that he shot Some Like It Hot in black and white because the makeup on Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis was a little off,
right.
or their 5 o'clock shadow kept coming through the makeup. And Marilyn Monroe insisted that all her movies be done in color.
Mm-hmm.
So she was disappointed when she saw that Some Like It Hot was not going to be in color. She saw some of the dailies. So that was what he told her. And that was, in fact, a lie. He just loved shooting in black and white.
And it looks so good as well.
Black and white rules.
It definitely does. I also love the scene with the maracas when Jack Lemmon, he's so excited about his engagement.
Yeah, he's so excited.
You're like, hang on a second. You know you're actually a man.
It's
he's like, la, la, la.
It's a great buddy movie.
It is.
I mean, they're the two of them together.
A couple.
They're so great together.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Well, Billy Pollahan had this to say about Some Like It Hot. It's the definition of a great comedy. It has two of the greatest actors of all time, Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. The comedy, nobody's perfect, and chemistry between Curtis and Lemmon is one for the ages. The soundtrack, performances, and characters show that my namesake, Billy Wilder, nice, was, is, and always will be one of the greatest directors of all time. Hashtag FilmGeek. Hashtag Profile for Life.
Nicholas Magliari says, Some Like It Hot is still one of the funniest movies of all time. Like all great comedies, it's endlessly quotable. My favorite part is when Jack Lemmon announces his engagement to Tony Curtis. It's a concept that inspired future films like Tootsie and Mrs. Doubtfire, Tony Curtis's Cary Grant-like oil baron, Jack Lemmon's confused bass player, and Marilyn Monroe's ditzy blonde form a trio translating to comedy gold.
Comedy gold. And that's what this movie is.
Yes.
But, you know, when it comes to movies that didn't quite make our Fast Five, we need another hour for this show.
I know.
But we're going to just try and, like, fly through some of the movies in The Others. Mm-hmm. What's on your list?
Lost Weekend, we mentioned before, from 1945, a film noir starring Ray Milland about an alcoholic writer. 4 Oscars, Best Picture, Director, Actor, Writing, and it shows the effects of alcoholism. It's quite dark.
It's dark, and
like
it's quite relevant.
Yeah.
Yes, it is quite dark. I love, obviously, we talked about the 7-year itch.
Yes.
And I love that Marilyn Monroe, her character's name, it's just the girl.
The girl.
She's the tomato from upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that scene, but she's rewatching this movie. This is, will you agree that this is like the ultimate? I mean, I know you like her better in Some Like It Hot because she gets more of a performance.
Yeah.
But this is sort of like the image that most people have of Marilyn Monroe.
Very iconic.
Just that iconic. And she's so beautiful.
She's so beautiful. There's also Ace in the Hole.
Ace in the Hole.
From 1951. Another film noir starring Kirk Douglas as a cynical reporter who stops at nothing to get a job on a newspaper. He's wonderful in this film.
He's amazing. And isn't Ace in the Hole a kind of movie that you just look back and go, boy, wasn't that like way ahead of its time?
Way ahead of its time.
You know, reporter trying to create a media circus.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
can you imagine a movie like that, Ace in the Hole, being done in the internet age?
Mm.
Mm, that actually could work.
That would be interesting.
I love Witness for the Prosecution from 1957.
Yep.
An excellent, gripping courtroom drama with Tyrone Power, Marlene Dietrich, and Charles Laughton, who's fantastic as the defense attorney. The way he kept putting like the eye thing and like shining the reflection to kind of intimidate his people. But it's such a well-acted and well-written thriller. One of the great courtroom dramas.
I still like Love in the Afternoon from 1957. Romantic film with Audrey Hepburn and Gary Cooper. I love the premise as well, that Audrey is the daughter of a private investigator and she falls for this playboy, Gary Cooper, and anything that Audrey's in. I mean, she's one of the greats.
She's one of the greats. As is William Holden in Stalag 17.
Mm-hmm.
Underrated, underappreciated film, although when you get people talking about it, they really love it. Americans in a German POW camp. It's probably most famous for being the inspiration behind Hogan's Heroes, the television series, although the movie itself is much more serious and much, much better than Hogan's Heroes, let's face it. But we had some profilers comment on some of the movies in our list of others. Caitlin Bonds had this to say about The 7-Year Itch. It's iconic. Every character is hilarious. And who can resist Marilyn? She was so beautiful on screen and really owned her role. Mm-hmm. I couldn't keep my eyes off her. Tom Yule was the loony, imaginative husband that desperately avoided every temptation while his family was away. And watching it all unfold on screen was truly entertaining. Though the film is from the 50s, it holds up perfectly. I could still watch this movie today and crack up. Hashtag profile for life.
I like this one about Ace in the Hole from Jen Kemp. Remember how controversial Nightcrawler was only last year with its dark portrayal of the media's role in satisfying humanity's voyeuristic obsession with violence and tragedy. Now picture that set in 1951. What you get is Billy Wilder's Ace in the Hole. Kirk Douglas gives a magnetic performance as a struggling reporter who sees a small town accident as his last chance to reclaim some of his former fame, milking the situation for everything it's worth. It's one of Wilder's more underrated films, but only because his catalogue is filled with masterpieces spanning across several genres. Wilder's brilliance lies in his ambition as both a writer and a director, and to not shy away from controversial subject matter while also crafting characters and storylines that are clever, captivating, and complex. He's truly one of a kind.
No question about it. And one more, this one's short and sweet, about Style Like 17 from John Shutt. Style Like 17 is one of my favorite Wilder films, and one that doesn't get much attention. Well, we just gave it some attention, so there you go.
And on our Profiles with Malone and Mance Facebook page this week, they did Best Movies by Billy Wilder. It got down to Some Like It Hot versus The Apartment. Now, we're filming this a little bit earlier this week, so as it stands right now, it was Some Like It Hot in the lead, but that could change. Ooh. So get over to our Facebook page and vote for your favorite Billy Wilder film.
Some Like It Hot versus The Apartment. Wonder what's going to win. Tough.
Let's get back into our Fast Five. Number two is...
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
Sunset Boulevard, released August 10th, 1950, 65 years ago, almost to the day. 11 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for William Holden, and Best Actress for Gloria Swanson. 3 wins, including a screenplay. It's one of the best. Now, what's interesting is that Sunset Boulevard lost the Oscars for Best Picture and Best Director to another film that came out that year that is also regarded as one of the best movies ever made about show business, of course.
All About Eve.
All About Eve. It's going to be a bumpy night indeed. 2 of the greatest movies about Hollywood came out that same year.
2 very dark movies about Hollywood, especially for the 1950s. It's a look at the studio system. It's a look at ageism in Hollywood. It's a look at what happens to stars once they're past their use-by date. It's very cynical. It's very anti-Hollywood. And like we said before, with Double Indemnity, it starts at the end and then works its way to the beginning. So it's not so much about what happens, it's about how it happened.
How it happened.
And it's ranked number 12 on AFI's list of top 100 films of all time.
Wow, that is amazing. And just like other films in our Fast Five, you have a love triangle and you have a suicide attempt.
Yes.
So just that feeling of desperation. It must have been so fascinating to a filmmaker like Billy Wilder. This is a riveting and engrossing film noir piece, a masterpiece, a brilliant, with a capital B, a brilliant screenplay. Amazing. Talking about the ageism in Hollywood, she was only 50.
I know.
Not 70. 50.
I love that Gloria Swanson played Norma Desmond as well, because she was a silent film star, so she's kind of making fun of everything that she did in her career, and she's a perfect casting, and lots of people were saying she was overacting in it, but that was on purpose. Her eyes, I mean, show such delusion behind them.
You completely
believe it.
She chewed her scenes perfectly.
She loved it.
Perfectly, but this is a film that I certainly appreciated more now than I did. I hadn't seen it for a few years.
Me too. And what I noticed about watching this film again was I live in Hollywood now.
Yep.
So I noticed all the locations.
That's cool.
And I noticed the Paramount gates, and that's not where you enter these days.
No, you enter through the other gate.
Other gate.
Yes.
I love all the cameos in this film as well. Cecil B. DeMille, Buster Keaton, and of course the iconic dialogue, as well as Ready for My Close-Up. There's I am big. It's the pictures that got smaller.
Oh, so great. So great. Time magazine was quoted at the time with its review, said, "It's Hollywood at its worst, as told by Hollywood at its best."
And I know you wrote this down as well, because I can see your note there, but Louis B. May, what he said.
Oh my God. Okay, yeah, you read it.
He said that he basically said to Billy Wilder that he bit the hand that fed him, and Billy Wilder said, "Why don't you go
F yourself. That gets a high five. That is so great. I love it. Also, at the time, the New York Times review, Thomas Pryor said, "It's that rare blend of pungent writing, expert acting, masterly direction, and artistic photography, which quickly casts a spell and holds until its shattering climax."
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing movie. Other Norma Desmonds considered were Mae West and Mary Pickford, but neither one of them got it. Like, they didn't realize, they still saw themselves as relevant. They didn't see themselves as has-beens and didn't want to see themselves in a movie
they didn't
as
get
has-beens.
The satire.
But, I mean, Gloria Swanson, she just chewed her scenes so perfectly. The melodrama, it was so perfect for that role. Like, she was always acting up until that very last scene with my close-up.
Well,
amazing.
Chris Day loves Sunset Boulevard. He says, Sunset Boulevard is one of the greatest films of all time. It captures what Hollywood is really like, and that ending is wonderful. See it if you have not. Hashtag profiler for life. Hashtag film geek.
How cool is it that the profilers just use these hashtags, hashtag film geek, hashtag profile for life.
Love it.
We are making an impact. Profiles rules. Let's give it another high five.
Profiles rules.
And Liam Logrand, my buddy, my pal, Liam.
Buddy.
Yeah, I love Liam. He's the man. There's no denying that Billy Wilder was ahead of his time as a director and most notably as a screenwriter, as he perfectly provided social commentary on numerous factors of society. This is most evident in his 1950 masterpiece, Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Wilder wasn't afraid to reveal a side of Hollywood that audiences had never been exposed to, and its glamorous and high-class reputation overshadows a system that isn't necessarily perfect. Gloria Swanson as Nora Desmond steals the show. She was perfectly cast by Wilder as her career ironically mirrors the character portrayed on screen. Her emotional yet disturbing attempt for retribution in Hollywood is consistently interesting and never dull or cheesy. This guy's like 16 and he's writing like this.
So great.
This is without a doubt one of the great performances given by an actress in cinematic history, and her story has since influenced many films. Most recently, the Best Picture winning film, Birdman.
That's very true. And that's what I love about classic films is once you see the classics, you realize like everything's influenced by something else. And then you can see the influences on modern day films. And it's so much fun.
It's so much fun when you go back and see a movie that has been so influential.
And you go, that's where it's
coming from. I gotcha. Well, this is what Profiles is all about. Talking about great filmmakers and great movies. And this is really what Profiles is all about. Interviewing the greatest celebrities, the greatest actors and actresses of all time.
Yes.
And for this very special Profiles on Billy Wilder, earlier today I had the chance to talk with Shirley MacLaine about the making of her number one movie here on Profiles. Here is the conversation with Shirley MacLaine. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Shirley MacLaine is on the line with us. Shirley MacLaine from The Apartment. This is the 55th anniversary of The Apartment. Why is this movie so timeless? Why does it make as much of an impact now as it did back in 1960?
You know, I think it is because the issue of corporate mentality and how you find your individual self-expression inside of corporate mentality in a capitalistic country and one that's dedicated to materialism like we are.
Yeah.
I think it found its way for a long time and will continue to find its way for a long time, because how do we live in this environment when the corporate way of doing things is more important than anything else?
Well, I mean, to say that The Apartment is Billy Wilder's crowning achievement, you know, that's a pretty bold statement when you look at films like Double Indemnity, Sunset Boulevard, Some Like It Hot. But what really is it about The Apartment that made it stand apart from these other films and really was his crowning achievement? One Best Picture, director, screenplay?
Yeah, I think it's because of this business of the corporate mentality. I mean, the others that you mentioned, Sunset Boulevard, although that's really very fascinating, what happens to an old movie star who still thinks she's on, and Some Like It Hot is just brilliant farce. But when you've got an examination of human beings and their individual feelings caught up in the swirl of corporate expectation, you got a classic.
Wow.
And I think because he was a foreigner, because he came from someplace outside of America, and by the way, adapted to the American idiom probably better than anyone.
That is an excellent point.
He had a beat on it that would be long-lasting.
That is an excellent point, that he came from a different someplace else. He had a different sensibility, and he just not only adapted, but he set a standard and raise the bar on these various genres that he tackled. And one other thing that Billy Wilder did was he sort of pushed the boundaries for what was deemed acceptable subject matter for Hollywood movies. I mean, what's your take on how he was able to do that?
Because he was a foreigner, Scott.
Yeah.
Because he didn't really feel the pressure of, should I say this about my own people? Although he became more of an idiomatic master as to what we do and joke about in America more than we are. But, you know, he came from Austria.
Yep.
And, by the way, worked his way up from South America. And so he has a worldly take on America. Therefore, he's outside of it a little bit more and felt confident. I mean, a lot of us Americans don't feel confident to comment on our country because of political incorrectness. That was going on then, too.
And to, you know, when you look at a movie like Sunset Boulevard and The Apartment, like you pointed out, this corporate mentality, I mean, sure, the movie was done in 1960, but even by 2015 standards, it's just so relevant and so timely and so right on the mark. But what do you recall about the first time you met Billy Wilder, and what was it that was different about him compared to other directors you worked with over the years?
Well, Billy, you know, really didn't have a sense of careful nurturing of people.
I get it.
He was very, very cryptic, very sometimes really. Kind of brilliantly cruel. I think that was his problem with Marilyn. I think Marilyn was scared to death of him, and that's why she was late every day. And then that pissed him off even more, and it became a kind of whirling dervish there. And then it got into Tony Curtis and what he thought. Now, Jack never had that. Lemon never had that. He was much more, I don't know, confident in his own ability to just show up and be neutral. But Billy could be quite difficult with women.
Wow.
Kind of insensitive. He wasn't part of the growth of the birth of feminine sensibility. No.
Well, in terms of the product, in terms of the movies that he did, the reason that we're still talking about them, you know, after you did The Apartment, was there another filmmaker that you worked with over the years, at least whose sensibility with the material came close to Wilder? And as I'm even asking this question, you know, I sort of go to James L. Brooks from Terms of Endearment and sort of capturing some of the stuff that made Wilder so good as a filmmaker.
Yeah, you have to be a little bit nuts and eccentric to be as brilliant as both of them are. I've not met anyone that has this European sensibility and such an accurate take on idiomatic American humor. It was amazing how Billy, not being an American, became the epitome of that expression. And
yeah.
The others I've worked with are American. I mean, yes, I've worked with other ones too that aren't, but I don't find anybody that I had worked with that I could. I never worked with Zinnemann, and I never worked with David Lean, so I don't know. They probably got a Brit attitude about American subjects. But now Billy was one of a kind, and when you look at his background and how he grew up and had to escape Nazi Germany, and
yep.
Oh my God, all the stuff that he went through, it's sort of like misery loves comedy.
Misery loves
comedy.
And that's
how he became so brilliant with comedy and drama, because he could do them both. That was his expertise. He could do both.
And that's one of the things that makes The Apartment so great, is it starts off as a comedy,
yeah.
And then it becomes very, very serious. And, you know, I know I saw you at the screening of The Apartment just earlier this year for the Turner Classic Movies Festival. And
yeah.
I heard you say that you only had a certain number of pages of the script to start with.
Mm-hmm.
How many
yeah,
pages was,
I was
that?
I was told that there were only 29 pages of script. They did not know what they were going to do. If I would do it and Jack would do it, they would write it according to how our chemistry worked and how we worked together. Now, at the same time, Jack had things in his life he was doing and dealing with, and I had things in my life. It's very interesting, Scott, that the gym game is in the apartment because I was hanging out with Dean and Frank and everybody, and where they were teaching me how to play gin rummy.
Wow.
Every weekend, they would, you know, teach me other ways to cheat and stuff. And he and Billy knew that. I was off with the Rat Pack every weekend, and so he put that whole scene in because of that was part of my life.
Wow, wow. Yeah, you know, the scene about the line where Fran Kubelik says, "Why do people have to love people anyway?"
Yeah, that came from, we were having lunch. Izzy, his co-writer, and Billy and Jack and I were having lunch one day, and I was having a kind of a difficult love affair with somebody, and that's, I just said, why do people have to be in love with people anyway? Why can't we just be in love with kangaroos? And he took the first part of the sentence, he jumped up from the table and said, no, we've got to rebuild the set, rebuild it, that's the set, that's the line, that's what she has to say, remember what you said, and that's what he did.
That is so great. You were in your early 20s when you made The Apartment. You know, between working with Billy Wilder and you know, Fred McMurray and obviously Jack Lemmon, you know, what were some of the things that you learned as an actress during the making of The Apartment that you carried through for the rest of your career?
You know, I used to speak when I said lines. I used to tilt my head. And he would interrupt and say, no. Straight head. I never knew that I had done it. I hadn't done that many pictures, so I didn't realize that had developed into a habit with me. And he taught me to be aware that that was my idiosyncratic little dance of my head on my neck and shoulders, and I should give it up.
Wow.
There was that, and there was some other kind of little idiosyncratic things I would do. I would do like this. Before I said every line, I would do that. And he took me to the screening room and showed me how many times I did that
before.
I said a line.
Yeah, so you became real self-conscious about it.
Well, oh, sure. I cut that out real soon.
Real fast. Well, I mean, listen, watching The Apartment, I mean, I've seen it so many times, watching again recently to prepare for the show, I'm watching the film with a different set of eyes and a more analytical set of eyes. And just one of the things that really struck me more than anything is your chemistry with Jack Lemmon is just so, so great. I just wonder if you could just share some special memory you have of working with Jack Lemmon on this movie.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't really what you would call sexual chemistry, which is what was so popular in Hollywood in those days. Our friendship is what shone through. We trusted each other. We really adored each other. I would come to days that I had off. I would come to the set and watch Billy and Jack work together. I wanted to see that kind of individual who was so dedicated to what he said with absolutely no temperament. And no sense of diva-ness about himself. And before every take, he would say, "Magic time, magic time."
Nice.
It was wonderful.
Wonderful.
And the sense of, he was like a real person. I was, by the way, going through his decision whether to marry Felicia at the same time, too. And she and I worked together with some little moments of manipulation to make him make up his mind.
Wow. Well, the last line of the film, "Shut up and deal." How did that line come about? Was that always in the script?
Well, nothing was always in the script, literally nothing. We didn't make that up. So I read it on a page. I don't know when it showed up on a page, but it was not something that was spontaneous that I can remember.
It's such a great line. It's such a great ending to the movie. Shut up and deal.
Yeah. And just, I wish I could say that it came out of a moment of, oh, come on, shut up and deal.
Yeah.
But no, it was on the page.
Well, before I let you go, I mean, just because of the long career and the movies, some of them we've already talked about, what other films of Billy Wilder stand out as among your favorites?
I loved Sunset. I loved, what was it, The Devil's Disciple? Was that the name of the one that didn't, with Kirk Douglas, that nobody
went to see? Oh, Ace in the Hole. Ace in the
Hole? Ace in the Hole.
Yeah, Ace in the Hole.
I thought that was brilliant.
That is fantastic. That's a great one.
And I liked his, I liked his dramas very, very much. And I loved the one with Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh,
he's just the best. I loved them. What was his favorite? Do you know?
Oh, what was his favorite? That is a really good question. I wish I knew the answer to that. But Barbara Stanwyck, that would be Double Indemnity from 1944.
And wasn't that brilliant?
Amazing film.
And it's so funny because we were, you know, working with Fred McMurray, who, of course, was Double Indemnity.
Yep.
It was so funny in working with Fred because at lunch, his dollar bills never saw the light of day. And it was kind of that was the joke around the set. We all had to buy lunch. And June Haver, his wife, she made him his lunch in a little brown paper bag.
Oh, wow. No kidding.
Yes.
Some people just like to hold on to their money. Well, listen, Sharon
McClain. He was the perfect person to play this this head of the corporate mentality because he was what you call a cheap changer.
Unbelievable. Well, listen, Sharon McClain, thank you so much for sharing these stories and for talking to us on Profiles about Billy Wilder. We are grateful for your time and generosity. And just thank you so much. And we just love your movies. We love The Apartment. All the best to you in Santa Fe. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott, very much. Good work you're doing.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Like I said, this is what Profiles is all about.
Amazing. I love her so much.
So grateful for her time to talk with us about Billy Wilder.
Okay.
This is what Profiles is all about. That brings us to our number one movie again, which is...
That's the way it crumbles, cookie-wise.
The Apartment.
The Apartment.
I just used that expression today.
Did you?
It's the way it crumbles.
That's the way
cookie-wise.
Exactly. You know, good point.
Yeah.
Released June 15th, 1960. 10 Oscar nominations, 5 wins, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Original Screenplay. Again, a masterpiece. Again, a love triangle and attempted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Starts off as a, you know, romantic comedy, takes a very deep turn, turns into something very deep, moving, and profound. Alicia, why do you love this movie so much where you see it so many times every year?
Several times a year. It's one of my favorite films of all time. I think because it's not a simple romantic comedy. There's so many layers to it. It's quite complex and quite dark and explores some really interesting themes. You know, the compromises that you make for success, the married man having affairs, being a pushover, getting walked over by people, falling for the wrong person, suicide, loneliness, unrequited love. It's got these flawed, heartbreaking characters that you really root for, and it's got some very funny moments as well as some very heartbreaking moments. And I think when I saw it for the first time, just realizing that there was so much to this movie, it really blew me away. And every time I watch it, I get something new out of it.
I didn't appreciate this movie as much as I ever did until just recently when I rewatched it. And I definitely thought about you watching the movie because I know how much it means to you.
Yeah.
The dialogue in this movie, you know, when Miss Kubelik says, "Why do people have to love people anyway?"
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, "When you're in love with a married man, you should wear mascara."
Yeah.
Oh, and there was another one. She goes, "Why can't I ever fall in love with someone nice like you?"
No, that's the way it crumbles.
Well,
cookie wise,
he's right there.
I know.
What are you waiting for?
Takes her a second. There's some brilliant moments in that too. I love when he's cooking spaghetti and singing along. And apparently, Billy Wilder didn't like to have his actors improvise too much, but he allowed Jack Lemmon just to sing whatever he wanted while he was making spaghetti with the tennis racket.
Yeah.
He's such an adorable character, Baxter, and I love when he finally stands up for himself and goes, nope, and walks out.
The end of this movie, when she runs to him, when she runs to save him.
When she realizes, oh, he does have these morals. And
he's a good person.
He's a good person.
He's a good person. He was the one all along.
Yeah.
So, like, running, when she runs to save him, I thought about the end of Jerry Maguire.
Yes.
When Tom Cruise runs through the airport and does the
hello. So many romantic comedies, right?
When Billy Crystal runs to...
Last Minute.
Runs to Meg Ryan at the end of When Harry Met Sally.
Yeah.
And probably a million other romantic comedies.
Yes, but hugely, this, hugely influential for romantic comedies, this one.
And again, just like everything else that Wilder did, he set the standard.
He did. He did set standard. Again, like we were saying, with a lot of his movies, very adult material, very controversial material for the time. I mean, you don't see anyone actually having sex, but you know exactly what's going on,
yeah.
What the apartment is being used for.
Yeah, totally.
The way they treat him as well. It's just horrible.
So bad.
And then he takes the hit, you know, the doctor thinks that she killed herself for him or tried to kill herself for him, and everyone thinks he's such a bad guy, but he's such a good guy.
And I just love what you said. I love what you said about when he stands up for himself and he says, Nope. The New York Times review at the time said, Wilder's direction is ingenious and sure, sparkled by brilliant little touches. This movie was shot in 50 days, only 50 days, and it took less than a week to edit together.
Well, I also love the way they used forced perspective to create some of the shots. So the office scene, it's actually rows of desks that get successively smaller and smaller and smaller. And at the end, they use children as little people. So it just looks like it's goes on forever.
Wow.
And that's to signify his insignificance in the whole office and his loneliness. And then they stacked his apartment with lots of shabby furniture and made it look smaller and more cramped than before. I like how he's eating his TV dinner with the movies.
Yes.
I relate to this film. Well, Seb Lacey says, The Apartment is my favorite Billy Wilder film. Jack Lemmon's performance as C.C. Baxter is fantastic in an everyman role as he deals with co-workers with dubious ethics. Shirley MacLaine is also wonderful as Fran Kublik, a movie that was definitely ahead of its time. I think it holds up well as it explores issues of fidelity and love in the workplace.
Well, Camille Howard sends us off on profiles about Billy Wilder by saying, I just finished applying for film school, and one of the most common questions I was asked was, what is your favorite movie?
Yeah.
Such a hard question, but I almost always said The Apartment. It's such an honest story. That's absolutely, it's honest and it's genuine about loving someone but having the other elements of life get in the way. I think even though it was made in the 60s, it's so relevant today. It was my first blood with Jack Lemmon, and now he's one of my favorites. They certainly don't make him like this anymore.
No, they don't.
But before we finish off this episode, just one more bit of business again. If you love this episode, if you love listening, watching to this profiles as much as we love doing it, and we did love doing this episode, Profile for Life, Film Geeks right here, please go to iTunes, subscribe to Profiles, rate and review us. Please, please, please rate and review us on iTunes. Please go to youtube.com/Popcorn Talk Network and check out Profiles. Subscribe, share the iTunes and the YouTube version with everyone. Make Profiles go viral. We need you to do this so we can keep doing this all the time.
Yeah.
Make sure you go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance. Like our page. Join in on the fun. Tell us what movies you love, why you love them. Join in on the brackets and tell us who you want to see us profile next, because we definitely do listen. We definitely listen.
We do.
And make sure you follow us on Twitter at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance, at Alicia Malone, at Movie Mance.
Yay.
I'm doing the rundown one last time, coming in at number 5,
Sabrina.
Number 4, Double Indemnity. Number 3, Some Like It Hot. Number 2, Sunset Boulevard. Number 1, The Apartment.
Boom.
So until next time, shut up and deal.
Oh, bye.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.